Welcome back to the D-Fly and Dixie podcast featuring Big Ten Network, ESPN, and Inside Lacrosse analyst and my old friend, Mark Dixon. I am your host, Dan Flynn. It's the last weekend in April, so we're deciding regular season races and conference tournament seating. So Dixie, let's get it. Dix, I still haven't recovered from the whooping the Blue Jays took on Saturday evening. It hurts. It hurts. My ambitious optimism that I tried to bring into Saturday's game was not rewarded. It was not well received. And a few people reached out to me, some Maryland fans and other people who listened to the show, just to let me know how wrong I was. And I was tongue-in-cheek saying that I thought they could win the game, but I was just hoping for an exciting game. And man, was I, it was the worst beating the Blue Jays have ever taken from anybody ever.
Look, I got you. All right. I got you. You're my guy. Your optimism was a little bit more than tongue-in-cheek. You were very hopeful, and that's fine. You never made a prediction or
the Shawshank Redemption, Andy Dufresne talking to Red.
Yes.
Hope is good. Hope is the best of things. Like I said,
your blind faith was so strong that I had people reaching out to me saying, did you really pick Hopkins to beat Maryland on the podcast? And I'd be like, where did you hear that? And I'll pick a bone with one of our listeners, Steve Hopkins. Okay. His son is a terrific attackman at St. Mary's, Will Hopkins. Apparently after a St. Mary's game, he's popping off to everybody that Mark Dixon picked Hopkins to beat Maryland. And I'm like, that was Dan Flynn, my co-host or my host, not me. So people were attributing your bold, wish with me.
I'll say bold wish. It's good.
It was a bold wish. Pay attention, people. You know how angry I get.
You know how you can like skim a story that's on in a newspaper or online or something, or anything. You're like, well, I kind of read it or something. But how do you skim a podcast? Are you like, I heard someone predict it, so it must have been you.
And
you're
it
was the other guy.
And you got a 50% chance to get it right. You can go to 33% if you talk about our guest.
That's true.
But I mean, God, bend over, grab your ears, pull it out.
So, Blue Jays.
You are not happy. You are not happy.
I'm sad.
Come on.
I'm sad.
Lay it on me. Lay it on me, String Bean. Get it off your chest.
I'm sad. I feel like two legends passed away this weekend. One, the Hopkins lacrosse superiority that ever existed is gone.
Wow.
Is gone. And Richie Moran, the Cornell legendary coach and one of the best guys. I had a chance to meet him when I was working in South Cross. We put together the inaugural IMLCA Coaches Hall of Fame banquet dinner, and I was sort of like the head of putting it together, and I had to reach out to all the legends of the game who were in that first class, guys like Fred Acey and Ace Adams, and Coach Adele, Bob Scott, like their families, but Richie, I got to know him a little bit and have like a little bit of a friendship, and great guy. And then I think it was the night before, so it was Final Four weekend in 2015 in Philadelphia, and went out to dinner with our crew at Inside Lacrosse, and who was sitting at a table at the Maggiano's restaurant, but he was there with his wife, and maybe it was like Jack Emmer, because he also got in that year, was sitting at the table, and man, they were just having a great time. I think he bought me a drink, and we sat for a minute and talked to him. Just a great coach and a person who just so significant in the lacrosse world.
Big time. And it's been a rough stretch, especially this year. And I was at Rutgers this past weekend for the Penn State Rutgers game, and they had a celebration of life for Tom Hayes.
Yeah.
Another legendary coach who not only had tremendous impact on Rutgers University and collegiate lacrosse, but also the international game. And Richie Moran fits that to a T. I mean, he was an ambassador for and a driving force behind Ireland getting into the World Games. So I was recruited by Cornell. I actually wanted to go to Cornell. That was my number one choice when I was in high school. And I just couldn't get my SATs up high enough for them to accept me. So, I ended up at Johns Hopkins. And I'm forever grateful for that. But I would have loved to have played for Richie Moran up at Cornell. He's kind of like this jolly guy, yes. But a fierce competitor, a loyal friend, and a passionate person. And I love the story. Obviously, you kind of pick up on it with people getting up in age, but the story on Inside Lacrosse, where he was able to watch his grandson for Army play against Cornell.
Incredible story.
And I didn't know he was that sick enough to, potentially be gone within a week or 10 days of that story being posted and being shared. But that was such a great story in and of itself. And then he passes away shortly thereafter. I mean, what a memory to have, for his family, for his grandson. And I really appreciated, this is more micro, but the fact that somebody was like, so who are you rooting for? And he has an Army sweatshirt on. Blood is thicker than water, Bob. And I get that all the time, with the Loyola Hopkins game this year. Oh, Mark, oh my God, you got to be torn. No, I'm not. My son plays for Loyola. When my son goes to North Carolina, it's it. So he will be sorely missed. What a fantastic, gigantic figure in this sport.
Absolutely. Dix, I imagine everyone who's been around the game of lacrosse for a while probably has or knows a good Richie Moran story. And I can't think of anybody better to talk about this and the timeliness of it, about Coach Moran, than our old buddy, Christian Sweezy. Christian's the author of a brand new book called We Showed Baltimore, The Lacrosse Revolution of the 1970s, and Richie Moran's Big Red. And he was able to hop on with us for a few minutes. Christian, how are you doing?
I'm really well, Dan and Dixie. Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be reconnected.
Yeah, and thank you for joining us. It's been I imagine your book came out just a couple of weeks ago, middle of April. And I know you were at Cornell this past weekend for their game against Brown. You even covered it for Inside Lacrosse. You did double duty there, and we appreciate that. But then the tragic news of Richie's passing at the same time. I want to talk about your book a little bit, but what's the overall impact of the legacy of Coach Moran?
The two things I would say about that. The first is he had a legacy on a personal level with so many people at Cornell. And even today, the story for Inside Lacrosse, the two main interviews were with people who didn't play lacrosse. One tried out for varsity and didn't make it, but kept up with Coach Moran for, a 30-year friendship. And the other played baseball at Cornell and became very close to Coach Moran. And to me, that sort of, I don't think that that's something you would necessarily see at, another school, football at, say, Alabama, not to pick on Nick Saban, but, the fact that you could have very deep and meaningful relationships with people you didn't coach and people who didn't even play your sport in both those instances. And so I think that the fact he had such an amazing memory, he remembered everybody went to high school. You would tell him something once and he would remember it, 20 years later. Mike Waldvogel, a longtime assistant at Cornell, said that they were at somewhere, a diner in Baltimore. And Richie said, someone came in and Richie said, oh, I know you, you're so-and-so. He said, yes, but I've never met you. And Richie said, no, we met at a party 15 years ago. Oh yeah, I was there. That was the sort of memory. Yeah. But as Stuart Binstock said today in the story, he could just make you feel like a king because he did remember details and he remembered things that were important. In terms of the sport itself, he really was the face of the NCAA tournament. He was very much the public face of the inception or inauguration of the NCAA tournament. There were people behind the scenes, some of whom were in favor of it in the USILA and frankly, some who were not. But very publicly, he was the one who said, we need this. We need to settle this on the field. And then his team with 12 players who had never played high school lacrosse, with starters from Canada, which was very rare in 1971, with a Native American starter, with players from New York, players from sort of all over, only one starter from Baltimore, and then one who had played at McDonough School but was a native of Auburn, New York, and they won the first national title. So, you know, the whole don't let your mouth write a check that your buck can't cash. Well, his mouth wrote a pretty big check, and they cashed it. And so I think that the things that we take for granted today, you know, this determining things on the field, even the conference tournaments to a certain extent, all began because Richie said we need to settle this on the field and not in a backroom vote.
In your book, We Showed Baltimore, you tell the story of how Coach Moran, coach from Long Island, and a group of players who were from non-traditional places and maybe some different places helped unseat the lacrosse establishment. How did his teams in the 70s really change the style and the thought of who should play lacrosse and how it should be played?
No, it's a great question. And the biggest thing was that Coach Moran was from Long Island. He'd gone to Sewanika High School. And in 1970, Sports Illustrated had an article where they said, you know, sort of establishing the bona fides of Long Island lacrosse. And they said within 5 miles of Hofstra University, there were 5,000 boys playing high school lacrosse. And that number in Baltimore would have been, you know, a fraction of that. Joe Finnett, the archivist at U.S. Lacrosse, thinks it was around 1,000 at most. You know, even Bob Scott and some of the stories would say, look, we have 35 high schools in the Baltimore area with lacrosse. Long Island has more than 60, and the rosters are bigger to begin with. And because Richie was from Long Island and because he was so popular and because he was had that effervescent personality and an amazing memory, he was really able to tap into those resources at a time when no one else really was. You know, Bob Scott was from Baltimore, the coach of Johns Hopkins, Buddy Beardmore at Maryland was from Annapolis. And the only other coach, Bilderback at Navy, was from Maryland. The only other coach from Long Island was Al Pisano at Army, but Army was dealing with the Vietnam War and I think was sort of on the dip all around athletically. And so Moran almost had those 5,000 kids to himself. And so he was really able, you know, Maryland had some, Hopkins would have some, but Moran really had the pick of the litter. And because he was from there, he sort of spoke their language, for lack of a better term. And those were the guys he brought into Cornell, and they were just a little bit of a different style. And he was able to get the most talented ones, and they won.
In your book, you researched it by interviewing dozens and dozens and dozens of former players and administrators, friends, coaches. I imagine some incredible stories came out of that. Could you share one or two memorable stories that either you have personally or that that really stood out that you put in the book?
Yes. One of my favorites was Frank Mealman, the defenseman from Cornell and the starter on the 76 and 77 title teams and the 78 team that reached the championship game. And he said, you know, when back then the athletic offices were in Teagle Hall, and I think they still might be to a certain extent, you know, the coaches were there, the athletic administrative offices were there. And Mealman said, if you had to go in there to drop off paperwork or, you know, the two sport guys would go see their other coach, the coach of the other sport, said they, you know, they really had to be careful going in front of Moran's office, because if he saw you, said, Frank, come on in here, Frank, you know, like, how are you doing? How are your parents doing? And of course, he knew both their names. You know, how's your girlfriend? Where's she from again? Like, how'd you meet her? Like, you know, how are your siblings doing it? And he would have known all their names too. But then it went even deeper. He said, oh, you know, mechanical engineering major, how are your classes? You know, what's your hardest class? What's your easiest class? You know, Matheson is in there with you, right? How's he doing? All right. And in the fraternity, you know, how's Stu Binstock? He tried out for me. How's he doing? He's in your fraternity, right? You know, how's that going? And it just is sort of, and Frank Mealman said, you know, if you're in there, you're in there for half an hour. And these guys who wanted to go hang out with their buddies or get meals or, you know, and they were like, oh, Coach Mann got me. Sorry, I'm 25 minutes late. Because, you know, but even Coach Mann, it would even be sort of like, oh, what now? You went to Sewanika. You know, what do you think our chances are this year? If you talk to Coach Rich, you should call Coach Rich. He wants to hear from you. Or, you know, all right, you know, look, we're recruiting these three kids from Massapequa. You know, we're recruiting O'Neill and we're recruiting Marino and we're recruiting Jager. What do you think of them? Do you know anything about them? You know, I heard Hopkins got the Catrone kid from Franklin Square. What do you know about him? You know, it was always just the discussions he had with his players were on a much different level than do this, you know, turn this way when we clear and, you know, slide this way on extra man. It was much more of an interpersonal relationship. And, you know, just given the dynamics of the sport, I think it's something that does set our sport apart a little bit differently from other sports because it is a little bit smaller. And you do have those networks of friends. So Frank Mealman's stories about, you know, having to tiptoe around Teagle Hall were, you know, and not because they're trying to avoid him, but just because it was half an hour if he pulled you in there and you had to go to class or go to lunch or meet your buddies. So stuff like that, I think, were some of my favorite parts of the book. And there are other people you know, even Tad Barrows, who played lacrosse at Brown, graduated in 1980, but had been on the sideline, a story that is revealed in the book, for the 76 title game between Maryland and Cornell at Brown University. And even he had a story where his senior year in 1980, you know, Cornell and Brown are only one of the winner of that game in the regular season will go to the NCAA tournament. Loser does not. Season's over. Barrows was 3 goals away from setting the single season goal mark at Brown. I think he had 46 entering that game. You know, scores 2 goals. It's 8-8 into overtime. Cornell wins 9-8. So he's 1 goal short of the record. And his season's over. His career's over. He was a senior year. And, you know, they went through the handshake line. And Barrows said he turned around. And the first person to greet him after the handshake line was Moran. Shook his hand, looked him in the eye, grabbed him by the shoulder, said, "You played a hell of a game. You know, how are you doing? What's going on?" And so this was, and Barrows said it always stuck with him, you know, how kind Moran was in that very low moment for Tad Barrows. And so, you know, again, the book is not, and it's not an anti-Baltimore screed by any means. The book ends with Johns Hopkins winning the 1978 national title. So, you know, I don't think Richie would have wanted it to be an anti-Baltimore screed. I just think that the book needed to show sort of how hard he worked to make the sport really what it is today, because he was the first one to break through the Big Five barrier.
Those people skills and that intuitive ability to read people, say the right thing at the right time, are translatable to any profession, any, you know, other career. He would have been successful at anything and probably could have coached just about any sport or been an incredibly successful businessman or any kind of thing you want to do, you know.
And he did coach high school football. He did coach high school basketball. You know, it wasn't just lacrosse. That was one of the things I tried to get into my book. You know, a lot of his motion offense came from basketball and not lacrosse.
Well, Christian, I really appreciate you hopping on short notice to join us. And we got to have you on again soon. We
I would love
down.
That.
Dixie and I should sit down for a while and talk to you about, you know, as the NCAA tournament gets going. Thanks again for joining us.
Yeah, no, thank you for having me. I loved every second of it. And anytime, I would love to come back.
Dix, can you believe it that this weekend wraps up the regular season? And to extend that even a little bit, some of the in the Big Ten, for example, they're starting their conference tournament this weekend. And there are games up and down schedule that are of great importance. Some teams are kind of done, but they have to figure out, they got to finish out the regular season. But there's a lot of exciting games this week. Let's start with a couple of midweek games just to get your thoughts on. Penn ekes out a win over Philadelphia rival St. Joe's in overtime, 13-12. I can't believe that their RPI is like still like in the top five.
That is a hot button for you, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I'm a Penn fan. I used to work there, got a lot of friends there, like their team. But I just feel like the eye test, we'll see. The Quakers. And then let's see other games. Brown beat Bryant 16-9 in a cool little rivalry game. And then in the battle for Connecticut, Yale 20, Quinnipiac 13. So some local midweek kind of rivalry games featuring Ivy League squads. It's about what we thought. I think the Penn-St. Joe's game was a little bit closer than maybe some people might have predicted.
A little bit closer. St. Joe's was winning the whole game.
Yeah. Well, they have a great team, man.
They're very good. Yeah. Penn had to use a 7-goal fourth quarter to come back. And the kid Gabe Fury was like his coming out party. I did watch watched the second half of this game. And so to your point, I'm thinking to myself, like, okay, Penn, I just feel like every year they're like a pretender and not a contender. Now, 2019 was the exception. They're always in the preseason poll. They're always in the RPI. They're always this. They're always that. And it's like, what about wins and losses? You know, what about the actual body of work? But I got to hand it to the Quakers, you know, between Gabe Fury, Ben Smith, freshman, 3 goals, huge goals. You know, Hanley and Gagar are the two names that pop up all the time for Penn, yet two other names come up and play great lacrosse down the stretch to get the Quakers the win. I'm a big Zach Cole fan now. I always appreciated his game before, but being able to sit and watch him play live for, you know, 2.5 quarters, that was, man, that dude's slick. He is good.
I think one of the keys to Penn coming back was Jamie Zusi won 48% of the faceoffs. Actually, and that's neutralizing Zach Cole a little bit when you used to win 70% of your faceoffs.
Down the stretch, he was huge. And I'm trying to think, was it the faceoff that started overtime? It was like a do-over because the referees determined that, I guess, that both players kind of raked it out, went out of bounds. They did a do-over. And then I think Penn got pushed. I can't remember. Anyway, it was a gigantic face-off, and Penn won it. And that was, yeah. So it was a great game. That was really, you know, a lot of drama. I don't know why Penn played the game in Penn Park.
Yeah, I think it's because the Penn Relays are this week.
Oh, okay, I got you.
And Franklin Field is pretty much, they're setting up. When
I got you. It's being staged for Penn. Yeah. Okay, makes sense.
Penn Relays track meet is a giant.
Yeah.
Tens of thousands of people will be there. It starts on Thursday, and I'm sure they're setting up in there.
Right. And Brown keeps the party going. I mean, maybe the hottest team in the country right now are the Brown Bears, outside of Maryland. They kept rolling with a hard-fought win over Bryant to win the Ocean State. And then Yale, you know, no hiccup in the Tuesday night game. Andy Shea is the one that coined the phrase, Tuesday is for the hunter. And they made sure that them as the hunted didn't get taken down. So congratulations to the Bulldogs.
Oh, they're surprising. As we start to look at the weekend preview, Dix, there are five top 25 matchups.
You're sticking with the top 25.
Yeah, I am. Because of the Patriot League, mostly. And there are two big Patriot League games on Friday night and one big East game of note on Friday. But before the Big Ten will have their quarterfinal games on Saturday. They're both at 1 o'clock. Why are they both at 1 o'clock? Like,
I don't know.
And they're not televised?
They're not. No, they're not. And I was informed of that officially about a week ago because we as the broadcasters were asking, and they're not being televised, but don't worry. We will have the semifinals and the championship from the University of Maryland, May 5th and May 7th. But replay of Michigan and Ohio State from a week ago. Ohio State won that game 14-12, really had that game in hand, and the Wolverines made a run late. And then Hopkins, Penn State, gritty effort by Penn State this past weekend. We're winning 14-11 in the fourth quarter with about eight and a half minutes left to go. And Rutgers came back and tied it, then won the game in overtime on a Ross Scott extra man tally. And can Hopkins pick up the pieces after that debacle? I mean, it was, there's no other way to put it. That was a debacle at Homewood Field this past weekend in every way, shape, and form. But Hopkins, they can show their toughness. They can show they can deal with adversity if they can come back and put together a good effort and knock off Penn State to go to the semifinals, where they will, if whoever wins that game, the Penn State Hopkins game, gets another shot at Maryland.
I believe the term is circle the wagons.
There you go.
The Blue Jays need to circle the wagons, and they'll be the "well, no one believed in us" team that if they can get by Penn State. But I think Penn State's probably feeling the same way. So I think there's an opportunity for the team that wins that game to have another shot at the number one team in the country, and making it to the Big Ten semifinals would be one of the highlights in a season with a lot of tough moments. And in the other game, it's just the big rivalry game. Get to play it again, which has got to be exciting. Speaking of the Big Ten, Dix, the all-Big Ten team came out on Wednesday afternoon, and you'll be surprised to know that Maryland dominated the awards. The Offensive Player of the Year, Logan Wisnowskis; Defensive Player of the Year, Brett Makar; Specialist of the Year, Luke Wehrman; and Coach of the Year was John Tillman. Additional Maryland players on the first team: Roman Puglisi named first team. And Rutgers was well represented as well on the first team with Colin Kirsch, Shane Knobloch, and Ethan Raw.
Yeah, I'm surprised Ross Scott didn't get first team. I think he's been Rutgers' best player consistently all season long. But, you know, still, Knobloch was last year's freshman of the year. Kirsch, the best goalie in the league. And then Rawls had a terrific season, too. Jack Myers from Ohio State. Glad to see him on the first team. And then Josh Awada, who's just had an incredible scoring season for the Michigan Wolverines, first team as well, right?
He was first team, yeah. Yeah. How do you feel about the way they do this? You know, Makar is really the only close defenseman on this whole first team. Bobby Van Buren from Ohio State and Jared Gene Felix made the second team. But I like a traditional team, you know, where, it, you know, you don't have to, if you're just going to give out the 10 guys, make it like three attackmen, three midfielders.
Well, remember, we're in a day and age of positionless lacrosse. So.
All right. Tell that to all the goalies out there.
Hey, man. No, well, what do you cry? You got a goalie on the first and second team, right?
No, I know. I hear
what you're saying, but no, I mean, I guess it's voted on, and I guess it's the players that get the most votes, get the, you know, regardless of position.
And
Bobby Van Buren, by the way, too, freshman year.
Yeah, freshman year. I don't want to leave him out. I was just talking about all the
right, the
Maryland guys. But to the victors go the spoils, and Maryland certainly has deserved everything that they will receive in the postseason based on how they have dominated the regular season.
I mean, well, they got eight guys on all Big Ten, and you probably could have gone more. You know, that's how dominant Maryland has been.
Yeah, so who from Maryland didn't make it that you think should? Well, Keegan Conn is also on it, I'm sorry.
I think Jake Higgins, the short stick D-Midi, is exceptional. Anthony DeMeo isn't on there. He potentially could have been on. And Logan McNaney, the goalie, isn't on.
Yeah.
Those are three guys right off the top of my head. Not necessarily in that order.
Garrett Degna, lone Blue Jay representing.
There you go. Second team.
And with no Penn State guys. No Penn State.
A team decimated by injuries. I was really impressed with how Penn State competed on Saturday against Rutgers. You know, on the field at one time, there could have been five or six freshmen, you know, Pup, you know, Ethan Long, Jack Frassian, the goalie, made his first career start. There were a lot of youth on that Penn State team. And they played great against Rutgers. Could have won that game.
Let's get to the action this weekend. Starting on Friday evening, Lehigh, 5-2 in the Patriot League, play at the Loyola Greyhounds, 5-2 also. This proceeding in the tournament starts on Tuesday. That game's at 6 o'clock. What do you think of this game, Dix?
Huge game. Loyola escaped Hamilton last week with an overtime victory over the Raiders in Colgate. And the week before that, Lehigh couldn't do the same. And Lehigh's lost two in a row. They lost a one-goal contest to BU on last weekend. So I believe if BU beats Army and Loyola can beat Lehigh, Loyola grabs the 2 seed. And vice versa for the Mountain Hawks. So, heck, I mean, you know, you're talking don't have to play on Tuesday and get, you know, the 1 or 2 seed, so you get an extra couple days of rest. The tournament will be at Nickerson Field in BU at Boston University, because BU has clinched the regular season championship. So this is a gigantic game between the Greyhounds and the Mountain Hawks.
Skipping over to the Big East, number 2 Georgetown traveled to number 21 Villanova. This is for first place in the Big East. Georgetown, 12-1 overall, 4-0 in the Big East. But Nova's hung around this season, hovered around that, you know, the top 20 all season long, in and out of it. They're 8-4 overall, 3-1 in the Big East. And this is for the top spot in the Big East.
Look, I know a lot's been made of Owen Murphy leaving the Johns Hopkins program, now playing for the University of Maryland. How about Brett Baskin for Villanova? Another ex-Blue Jay making some things happen for his new ball club. I just think Georgetown has too much firepower. I think they're really rounding in the form. Was really impressed watching them beat Loyola 14-7 during the week last week. And then they steamrolled St. John's this past weekend. They just seem to be a team that's you know, getting healthy. Owen McElroy, the goaltender, is back, rounding in the form, and you know, this will be a tall task for the Wildcats.
BU, number 15 in the country, will host the number 16 Army West Point Black Knights. We're 5-2 in the Patriot League. As you said, BU is undefeated. That game's at 8 o'clock. But before I get your opinion on this, you had a chance to sit down with Boston University head coach Ryan Pauley this week. And let's bring in Coach to hear about the Terriers.
We are pleased to be joined on the D Fly and Dixie podcast by Boston University head coach Ryan Pauley. The Terriers are currently 10-3 on the season and have clinched the Patriot League regular season championship and will host the Patriot League semifinals and championship in the next coming weeks. Coach, thanks for taking the time out of your schedule to stop by.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here, Mark. Thanks for having me. Really enjoy the show. So, you know, happy to be a guest for sure.
So you rewind to 2021 and the Terriers were able to play a quote unquote full season, but it was a little unusual. The Patriot League split the competition into like a North and South kind of situation. How would you compare being able to play out of conference the entire Patriot League in 2022 to last season? How different is it?
It's night and day, Mark. I mean, it's last year on, you know, listen, we were in a pandemic, so there were other teams that weren't able to play. So we were thankful that we could play, but it looked nothing like a regular season. We barely had a fall season. We were in groups of, you know, small groups of 8 to 10. We were actually wearing masks on our helmets outside. You know, as you mentioned, the Patriot League got split. We ended up playing Army twice. We played Colgate twice. You know, it was nothing like what a regular season. And then to, you know, take a step further, you know, we were pretty, you know, affected by COVID, you know, having some untimely cases. And last year, it seemed as if it could go wrong. It did go wrong with COVID injuries, just scheduling. And it was just a really challenging year. So, you know, again, other people didn't get to play. So I certainly am, you know, sympathetic of that. But from a challenging standpoint, it certainly was the most challenging, you know, season of my career, and just kind of had to grind and get through it, to be honest.
As you progress through the 2022 season, one regular season game left, and then, of course, you'll have the Patriot League tournament. What are some things, or is there a particular thing that you look at this season and say, wow, I am really thankful for this, or we really missed that?
I'm thankful for my seniors. I think they were – I mentioned all the struggles that we had in 2021, but – they never used it as an excuse. And as soon as the season ended, we could have said the season wasn't good because of X, Y, and Z. And they said we weren't, our culture wasn't good enough. And then we were dealing with some really hard things, but our culture wasn't where it needed to be. And it wasn't a bad culture. It just wasn't a championship culture. So I still remember the phone call, you know, getting on a Zoom with the seniors, and it was, we're going to change this thing and we're going to change it immediately. And, you know, our season ended in May. And, you know, middle of May, we started, you know, working on some things and changing, you know, focused on, you know, a little bit of accountability with our players. We talked a little bit about peer to peer, holding each other accountable. It's kind of start with our summer workouts, and the seniors wanted to leave a legacy and leave this place in a better place. And they kind of had a vision of what they needed to do, and they've executed to a really high level.
A lot of the coaches that we speak with in Division I lacrosse are at schools where football is king or basketball is king. Boston University is a unique school in that it's collegiate hockey that is the main sport in addition to lacrosse. But what's that dynamic like to be at a hockey school up in the Northeast and the relationship between BU lacrosse and BU hockey?
It's a great relationship. It's, you know, one of the things that I noticed on my interview, and we're talking 10 years ago when I was walking through, was just BU wants to win a national championship at ice hockey. And I knew that the resources were there. Certainly the athletic support, the university support was there. And I knew it would take time. I knew it wouldn't be overnight, but as you walk through, and we typically bring our recruits to the, to Aganis Arena, our hockey arena, because it is so impressive and it does show a vision of the athletic department. When I walked through there in my interview, I said, this place wants to win. And I quickly said, okay, if we can execute our vision and over time continue to build a foundation and kind of work towards moving this thing forward each and every year, it won't be long till we're, you know, competing for championship Patriot League and eventually NCAA championship. So on top of that, certainly the hockey program, you know, we're helmet sports and we're physical and, you know, there's a great relationship, a great respect for, you know, how they play and how they train. And certainly they have professionals going on. So they take their sport, you know, extremely serious because they're trying to be professional. So, you know, we have certainly talked to our players about how they, you know, their recoveries and their training and all the things that they put into, you know, taking their skill set to the next level. And hopefully we'll have some pros. It's not quite the same, but certainly if we're thinking in that regard, our players are maximizing their ability over the 4 years here. It's only a good thing.
You mentioned it's been 10 years since you've been at the helm of Boston University lacrosse. And that building to championship level competition, championship level accomplishment, and you've got it in 2022. What's that journey been like? What have been the challenges and what have the rewards that you've seen?
I mean, the rewards are easy. All the relationships that you know, that we've made. And, you know, when I say we, I'm talking my staff and administration. You know, we treated this program like a 40-year program, even though we were going varsity in 2012, you know, our first season was in 2013. There was approximately 35 years of club lacrosse. So one of my first journeys was to kind of reach out to those club folks and see who wanted to be involved. And we've had a great, you know, outpouring of people from the first team to the middle teams, some really successful teams that had a great experience and wanted to be a part of this. And we've started an advisory board council and guys sit on that. And then they're trying to, you know, help these guys get jobs and be mentors and help us with fundraising. So it's been really, that's been super rewarding. You know, you fast forward to the varsity years to, you know, going through it with you know, the first team, the second team, and, you know, all the players that kind of came here that we didn't have a locker room. We just, all we had was a vision to get so many techs from so many, you know, both varsity and club alums with our recent success and guys just saying, you know, I'm so proud of you. And, you know, I'm so happy to be a part of this and be part of this family has been, you know, super rewarding. On the challenging side, you know, we've been so close so many times, you know, it didn't take us long to kind of get to that top 25, top 20 level where we were beating some really competitive teams, but we couldn't get over the hump. And the first hump was making the Patriot League tournament. You know, it took us 3 years to make the tournament. And we had games that we just needed to win one game and we'd be in the tournament and we would lose a heartbreaker and lose a one goal game. And then it was like, okay, now we have to, you know, get to a championship weekend and, you know, we would lose a quarterfinal game or lose a semifinal game. So, you know, the challenge has been taking those steps and having those heartaches and those guys put everything they have into it to come up just a little bit short. So this team is really focused on that and kind of just, What were some of the areas that we came up a little bit short? Was it culture? Was it training? Was it rest? Was it recovery? Was it preparation? Was it execution? And we've had a lot of, you know, we meet with the seniors. We met this morning at 7:45. We meet every single Wednesday and we talk about state of the team, where they're at. They certainly get to tell me what's on their mind. We got to fix our speaker. Our speaker doesn't work right. That's been on the topic. Want to have great music for this senior night. So they bring that up every week. Makes me laugh. So we're going to fix that. And, you know, it's just a great group. So just excited to, you know, kind of get over that hump a little bit. And we still got a lot of work to do. We got a huge game on Friday night against a great team in Army. One I have the utmost respect for. Coach Alberici and his staff does a great job. And then, you know, we got a weekend that we got to play our best across. So I am proud. Our focus has been, with the seniors' help, getting better each and every week, process over outcome. And it's really been beneficial to this team.
Yeah, you got to get those tunes straight, Coach. The vibe.
Yeah.
The mood, yeah, you know, that's key, yeah. Critical. for pregame. I know I've spoken to you about this in the past, and also Coach Sillippo, your offensive coordinator, with all the schools around you. So you have Boston University, Boston College, Harvard, and Northeastern. But something you guys take a ton of pride in is that your address is the only one that actually says Boston, Massachusetts. I mean, I know that we're laughing about it, you know, but how important is that? How much pride is baked into being Boston University?
Yeah, there's a ton of pride. And I think that's a huge selling point for us as a city of Boston. It's such a cool town. I went to Merrimack, so I was outside of the city, but certainly spent a lot of time in Boston. Certainly when I was at Yale and this job came available, it was of high interest to me because I know what a cool town Boston is. And our guys love it. They love being, we're right in the city. You know, nothing against BC or Harvard, but you know, they're Northeastern's in it. You know, Northeastern's in it and we're in it. I mean, you're going to hear ambulance, you're going to hear police cars, you're going to hear the city, you know, the excitement of the city and the pace of the city. And we embrace that. We love it. So our guys really embrace the fact that we're right downtown. You can see we got tall buildings and, you know, our guys love being in the city and I don't think they would want to be anywhere else. So we certainly take that pride and certainly we try to, you know, represent the city of Boston when we play.
We love food on this podcast. And if you've listened, you probably picked up on that, you know, through the years. If anyone's coming to Boston University, what are some must stops?
There's only one stop, Mark, and that's T. Anthony's. So it's right. It's literally on our campus. They, if you walk in, you know, you can just picture an old pizzeria. And there's, you know, old football, BU had football 30 years ago. So there's football teams, there's soccer teams, field hockey teams. Yeah, we're going to have to get our team up there. You know, they're typically champions. So we got to get our regular season pitcher up there, up in T. Anthony's. But just, you know, great people. They do all our team meals, but that's the one stop. It's literally on our campus, you know, half a block from our office. So that's the go-to for sure.
I can attest to that joint. I've eaten there before. Yeah. It is legit. Yeah. It is legit. It's old school and it's very, very good. The Patriot League. I mean, you're talking about a conference that is large. Six teams make the playoffs, but every game is a battle, scratch and claw. How would you best describe the Patriot League in 2022 and its evolution since BU has been a part of it and you've been coaching in the league?
It's a gauntlet. I mean, it is every single week. If you don't bring your A game, you go home with a loss. And, you know, I start with the coaches. You know, what a great, you know, collection of coaches with great experiences. Some have been there, you know, Charlie, Alberici, Kevin, you know, have been there for, you know, over 10 years and have built these programs into national powerhouse. And then certainly Joe Amplo doing his thing. I forgot Frank is another trademark up at Bucknell and these guys just, and then you have these young coaches, you know, JL and Myers down at Lafayette, just, you know, Matt at Colgate, just doing great things. So it is just an absolute gauntlet with great coaches. And you know, you're going to have to bring your A game as a coach, and you know, you're going to have to bring your A game, you know, as a team. And then just the diversity, you know, you have the service academies and how they play. They're so tough and they're great on the ground and they don't beat themselves. And then, you know, Bucknell is with their 10-man ride and doing all the creative things that Frank does. And Lehigh, well, you know, is going to punch you in the mouth and you're going to have to be really tough. It's going to be a low scoring defensive game like we just played. And certainly the other teams, you know, continue to recruit and get high profile players and play at a really high level. So again, it is just a collection of great teams. And it's always competitive. You look at the games, they're always one goal. And this team, you know, you think you figured out who the best team in the league is, and they go and play the seventh team statistically and they lose, or it's an overtime game. And you're like, oh my God, like I didn't see that happening, but it happens week in and week out. So, you know, the best way I can describe it, and it's kind of showed in our history of, you know, we've had some really good teams and, you know, we went through an early in my first couple of years, we had beaten the conference tournament winner in our regular season, but had lost to a team that didn't make the conference tournament. We did that like 4 or 5 straight years where, you know, we certainly weren't a number one seed, but we could beat the number one seed, but we could, on the same hand, we could lose to a team that didn't even make our conference tournament. And that is just, you know, our league in a nutshell. Anybody can beat anybody. And the diversity of how teams play makes it really challenging, but it's an awesome league. I wouldn't trade it for any other league. And I love being a part of it.
Looking at your schedule, a lot of quality teams on this schedule, a very strong schedule. And you had a tough stretch in like a 4-day period. You played both Yale and Princeton. What's the mindset in scheduling programs of that ilk that close together at that point in the season? And what were you able to take away from those games that have helped you since?
Sure. I'll answer your second question first. Scheduling, and I think you've had coaches on, scheduling is a bear. I mean, it is when you're doing, we have eight conference games, the league sets the schedule, you get a bye week, you know, we're deep in conference schedule. So you hope you can find a game that's local that, you know, fits your needs. You know, do you want a high RPI game? Do you want to, you know, whatever you're trying to figure out. And it just so happened Princeton had the same bye week as as we did in the Ivy League. So that's kind of how the Princeton game fell. And then, you know, Andy just reached out to me and said, hey, we're looking to fill a game. It just, that was the only date Andy could play. And it worked, you know, midweek, you try to keep a full, you know, we probably are in paralysis by analysis. When you get into your league games and you take a full week and you make sure you're so prepared. So, you know, typically we don't like to have a midweek game before a league game. So it just kind of fit, that date worked for Andy. You know, Princeton fit in that bye week. It was, you know, not that we take Princeton any more lightly. It's just, it wasn't a conference game. So, you know, we end up playing it. Honestly, Mark, it was one of the best things that we've ever done. It was, we talked about kind of taking this program to the next level, looking at some things that maybe we could change to help us take that next step. We've played competitive schedules. We've never played this competitive of a schedule. You know, even we scrimmaged Maryland in the preseason, which was terrific for us to just see, you know, that juggernaut. Okay. Then we, play Bryant our second week. We play UMass, you know, UMass plays just like Army. They're tough. Bryant, kind of free flowing like Bucknell, and, you know, they push transition. So all these games were kind of picked for a reason. And then right in the middle of our season, you know, we have, a Princeton and Yale team that are top 5 RPI, really prepared us for this stretch down the road with the Loyola, Lehigh, Army, our three toughest games in conference.
I know you have a very difficult task ahead of you playing Army this coming weekend, and I don't want to look too far ahead, but how proud are you and what does it mean to be you lacrosse, to be the host of the Patriot League tournament? Nickerson Field is a place with a ton of history, pretty unique venue. What are you most looking forward to showing the lacrosse world with BU hosting for the first time ever?
I couldn't be more proud of this group. You don't want to get ahead of yourself. And certainly we know we have work to do. And if you could pick one, you would absolutely pick to win the postseason tournament and the at-large bid. But no BU team has ever been 5-0, let alone 7-0. We've never been able to have this type of success. We've never been playing our best lacrosse this late in the season. Our tendency had been to play a little bit better in the middle of the season and then, you know, tailor off a little bit. So the fact that we've been able to play our best lacrosse, the fact that the adversity, you mentioned the Princeton Yale, like that was a hard week. You know, we lost 2 significant players and it was a really hard week. And, Yale kicked our butts. I mean, that was as good a butt kicking as we've had in a long time. And to kind of regroup from that, we played well against Princeton. We didn't win the game, but we played better. I think proved to our guys that we could play at a really high level against a really high opponent. But we were still sitting there after an 0-2 week saying, oh my gosh, here, you know, we got to go down to Loyola, got to go to Lehigh. Certainly, you know, we're staring down this barrel. And, you know, I'll never forget, we're in the locker room and we said, you know, and I was the one that spoke, but got the team together. This doesn't change anything. Okay. We have a goal. Our goal is still intact and we need to use this. And we always talk about getting better each and every week. Guess what? We lost to Princeton, but we got better this week. All right. Now we need to take that lesson, learn what we learned from Princeton, from Yale, apply it to our Loyola game, apply it for the rest of the season, and just keep getting better. And our guys responded incredibly, probably played our best, you know, most complete game of the year against Loyola, and found a way to win against a really hard team to beat in Lehigh at their place.
Sure. Sure.
I'll answer you. Sorry, Mark. I didn't even, you know, BU, was very strategic in adding lacrosse when they added lacrosse. You know, they had a plan. We had a great venue, as you mentioned, in Nickerson Field. You know, I kind of laugh about the speaker thing, but our venue is incredible. I mean, Babe Ruth played on our field. It was an old time, the Boston Braves. I mean, the history at Nickerson, it's literally a national landmark. So to bring everybody here to be able to host, you know, hopefully play our best lacrosse, have a fabulous Patriot League tournament and show the rest of the world how cool it is to go to Boston. We have dorms, you know, over our field. You know, the backdrop of the city is, you know, a dream come true for me and my team.
I guess one of the big questions is, can T. Anthony's handle the crowd? They'll be doing a brisk business that weekend.
Yeah, there's a fine line. You know, Carmella definitely loves the business, but sometimes she gets a little stressed and a little overworked. So she's one of a kind. So I think they'll appreciate the business, but I think they're going to be working some hard hours for sure.
It's a good problem to have. Good problem.
Exactly.
To have.
Exactly.
Looking at this edition of the BU Terriers, who are your leaders on this ball club, and who are your primetime players, if they're not some of the, you know, more older guys?
Yeah, our leaders are without question Timmy Lay and Matt Hill, and our two captains. We let our players select our captains, and our team was, you know, spot on. You know, Matt was a captain last year. You know, came from Malvern Prep. His brother played here. When Matt came here, we weren't sure what his role was going to be. You know, he wasn't very highly recruited. And Matt just finds a way to get on the field, and he just does all the little things on the field, but off the field, you know, he's been, you know, if I would say he's been our best leader. He has just found a way to inspire. He's found a way to, he's not a super outspoken. He's not, you know, he's borderline an alpha. I wouldn't call him an alpha, but he's found a way to find his voice and hold guys accountable. The team respects him. And he just, he's done a tremendous job. You know, he holds me accountable. He holds our staff accountable. If we miss something, you know, I got a text from Matt, hey, we need to do this, you missed this. And great, Matt, you're right on, you know, thank you for saying that. You know, and then Timmy's just a super kid. He's such a nice kid. The kids love being around him, you know, has scored a ton of big goals, but he leads by example. And he's just a kid. If a kid's got a problem, you know, they go to Timmy, and not that they wouldn't go to Matt, but Matt's going to tell you straight. Timmy's going to, you know, put his arm around you and say, this is, you know, we'll handle it this way and you'll be okay. And, you know, the combination of those two guys together has been really fun to watch, and it's been a big part of our success. You know, as far as our primetime players, you know, our attack unit has been phenomenal all year. Timmy's a part of that. You know, Vince D'Alto and Louis Perfetto. Louis is kind of our unsung hero, who just kind of is steady Eddie and gets everybody involved, but certainly when we need him, can step up. It was unbelievable against Loyola. Probably had his best game of the career. And then Vince is, you know, is a prototypical scorer, just finds a way to fill up the stat sheet, and, you know, is a really strong player for us. At the X, I mean, we're able to get Connor Calderon from Maryland this summer was critical. You know, we kind of, at the end of the year, you kind of look at strengths and weaknesses with graduation. And last year, Faceoff X was a weakness of ours. We faced off at, you know, high 30s. You know, not a level that we aspire to be. And, you know, now we're high 50s, low 60s, and Connor has taken 97% of it. I don't know the percentage, but it's really high. And he's turned that weakness into a strength. And that's been just a huge, and when I get Sisselberger, you know, so much respect for Sisselberger. I think he's the best I've never played against Baptiste, but, you know, he's the best I've ever played against. And, you know, Connor did an amazing job. So, defensively, you know, Roy Meyer, leading the country in calls turnover. He is such a havoc maker. He's just, I love, you know, my, I cut my teeth as Yale's defense coordinator and, you know, had teams that caused turnovers and made plays and got sticks on balls. And, you know, we didn't 10-man ride as much as we do, but, you know, just love that type of player. And Roy just takes it to the next level. He's so disruptive. He's great at, you know, in tight checks. If he gets his hands, he's not the most physical guy, but if he gets his hands, he can be disruptive. He can, you know, cause you to make bad passes. He can strip you. And then it's just instincts, passing lanes and making plays is the best I've been around. So he's been, you know, Patriot League Defensive Player of the Year candidate, you know, type of player. You know, Patrick Morrison's been, has been a great, defensive player for us with Will Carson down low. Dane DeGoler, you know, stepped up with an injury. You know, our defense is under Coach Lattimore's done an awesome job. And then Matt Garber. Matt Garber's had an unbelievable year as our goalkeeper. So, and honestly, Mark, like I could name our whole team. I think that what makes this team really special and gives me, you know, confidence going into these games against Army and whatever comes up in our Patriot League and, you know, knock on wood, if we can keep this thing going, but we're a really good team. You know, we have a really good attack unit. We have a solid first line. We're good at the X. We're good on defense. We're playing a lot of experienced guys at the D-mitty position. You know, we ride really hard. We put a ton of emphasis on that. I think we clear the time. Clearing's been up and down, but I know we're capable of clearing at a high level. So our special teams are good. So it's just, I don't want to, you know, sound overconfident, but like I really like this team because of, you know, how solid we are in a lot of areas.
Sure. And I mean, listen, you know, you mentioned some of the challenges that you've had years previous. I know that BU doesn't take anything for granted. And you've got a tough Army team coming in this weekend. When you look at the Black Knights, what do you see? And kind of, you know, what's the focus of BU this week in terms of trying to be successful against Army?
You know, when you think about Army, you know, it starts with Nick Turn, and he's just been a great player and, you know, certainly Patriot League Player of the Year caliber player. And but this year I noticed they have other players stepping up and, you know, he's not he's still their primary ball carrier, but the ball is in a lot of other players' sticks offensively. They're making plays offensively. But and it's a big but, you know, when the game gets on the line, you know, the ball ends up in his stick and he's been able to, you know, win a couple games by making some plays. And I have a ton of respect for that. And, you know, three or four games, maybe two or three games in the Patriot League where, you know, he's made plays down the stretch to either allow them to come back and tie and eventually take the lead, or he scored that game winning goal or assisted on it. So just a ton of respect for them. And they're always great on defense. I mean, that is, you know, that's just a staple of Joe Alberici teams. They're going to be tough. They're going to be physical. They're not going to make a ton of mistakes. They're going to make you earn every single goal. You know, certainly they have a strong goaltender. So again, it's a well-coached team that doesn't beat themselves. So we're going to have to bring a really strong effort. You know, if we're going to get in the right, you know, the left side of the column on Friday night.
One last question for you, Coach, and we're asking all our guests here. It's the question of 2022, and especially, you know, this time of season where you're down in the home stretch, things are tight, things are tense. What are some things that Ryan Poley may do to, you know, quote unquote, relax, music, television shows,
yeah,
any other hobbies or interests?
I mean, all of the above. I mean, my staff will probably, I'll try some crazy diet for 10 days and lose, you know, 15 pounds and then get it back the next week. So that's one thing. Love music. I always have music on, you know, Jimmy Buffett, Jack John. I try to like, as I'm pretty tense on the field, I'm pretty tense in the office, but I like to keep my music
a little mellow.
Yeah, no, I don't have Coach Uecker. He's got all the, you know, the Black Sabbath and all that stuff, all the headbanging stuff. That's not me. I'm more on the mellow side. So a huge Philadelphia sports fan. So unfortunately, I'll be stressing at night with the Sixers. So they won't be able to go to seven games after up 3-0. Silipo's a huge Celtics fan, so we talk about that a lot. So just the normal stuff, you know.
That's neat. That's neat stuff. And of course, Coach Uecker is going to be a headbanger. He's a loyal at Don. So that's how.
Yeah, there you go.
How we roll.
He's got headbanging, and then he's got Grateful Dead. So I can't keep on whatever day it is. I can't keep track. So
he's got a good mix.
Yeah, great mix.
Great. Well, Coach, we really appreciate you taking the time to chat with us. Thank you so much for being our guest this week. best of luck on Friday night against Army and the rest of the 2022 season.
Thanks, Mark. Appreciate it.
Obviously, the work is not done, but congratulations to Boston University, their first ever Patriot League regular season championship. They get to host the Patriot League tournament, which is a huge deal. And just really impressed with that program, with this year's team, gritty, tough, just a lot of unknown guys just making big plays and playing great lacrosse. And, BU with a big one against Army. The Black Knights, man, they're going to be chomping at the bit to get after the Terriers after losing in overtime to Navy a week ago in the Star game. So it should be a great game up north this weekend.
Yeah, this is a big game for Army. We talked about last week. Their RPI sits around like 21. So they need to put themselves in a good position for Patriot League tournament. And I think they've got to win that. And they got to get to the AQ in order to make it to the NCAAs. On the other hand, BU sits at number 12. Regardless of the outcome of this game, I don't think they'll move very far because of the strength of their Army as an opponent. And, they're in good shape. Certainly they want to win this and win the AQ. They don't want to lose a game. But I think they're in a better position. Army needs this game really bad.
Agreed. And BU is very much like a lot of other programs that we talk about on this show. The schedule, getting a better schedule every year, challenging your team, putting yourself in a position to be considered if you shouldn't win your conference AQ.
On Saturday, there are some great games in the Ivy League and one in the ACC. Number 14, Cornell, kicks off the schedule when they will travel to Princeton to take on the number 7 Tigers. Coming off of a tough loss at Harvard, Cornell suffered a couple of tough losses. Both of these teams need this. There's a logjam of 3-2 teams in about 5, 3-2 teams in the Ivy League. If Princeton doesn't win this game, they're the number 2 RPI team right now. They won't make the Ivy League tournament. And that could be a doomsday for some teams sitting on the bubble if Princeton still has a high RPI and doesn't even make their conference tournament. So it could lead to many Ivy League teams, 5 or 6 as at-larges. But both teams really need this in order to make the Ivy League tournament next week.
Crazy how this thing is coming down to the wire, but why wouldn't we expect anything less with all the success that the Ivy League has had? I mean, there's 6 teams possibly going to the NCAA tournament. I say possibly because I think after this weekend, things will really they will shake out. Teams are going to be 4-2 versus 3-2 or 3-3. Uncanny though, that you have the 5 teams are 3-2. Penn is then 3-3. It's nuts, but hey, that's Ivy League lacrosse in 2022. How about Harvard putting up 19 last weekend against Princeton?
And that was a bad start to my day. Kudos to Coach Byrne and the Harvard Crimson, but as a bandwagon Tigers fan, that was a tough way to start my Saturday. And then I was finished off by the Blue Jays.
God, I didn't even think of that. Your day was just one foot in the butt after another, huh?
Yeah, and that in that game, I mean, Princeton, they just looked tired. They ran out of gas. Harvard was just running by them in the fourth quarter, scoring all their goals, just dodging, running right by guys. And there were double teams. There was this one, like the end of the game, Princeton down 3 goals, didn't double team, just let the clock, let them run out the clock, the shot clock. So,
what'd you think of Princeton's helmets?
With the wings on them?
Yeah.
Oh, I love those.
Did you like them?
I love those. Like the Delaware Blue Hen, Michigan football.
It just looked a little clunky. Helmets. It didn't look as sleek as Delaware or Michigan. It looked a little, I don't know. Maybe I'm being too harsh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe it's also the color, too. I'm not a big orange and black. Except for the Orioles.
Yeah, same. And Halloween.
Of course.
Another huge game in the Ivy League is a huge rivalry when number 9 Yale, 9-3, 3-2, will take on the Harvard Crimson, who are number 12 in this week's poll, or 8-3, and also 3-2, part of that log jam. That game's at 2:00 in New Haven.
Yeah, I mean, last week for the Big Ten, you had rivalry week, and now you got rivalry week in the Ivies. Cornell, Princeton, Yale, Harvard.
Brown-Dartmouth.
You know, Yale can score goals. They're very, very physical. And how about Harvard putting up those goals against Princeton? All of a sudden, a team that you thought was, you know, going to have to scratch out 7 or 8 goals a game, you know, more than doubles that projection. And all of a sudden, you know, not that this would have been a big game to begin with, but now both are 3-2 and jockeying for position. And it's going to be a slugfest.
Yeah, no matter who wins this game, both of these teams make the Ivy League tournament.
So they're in. Okay.
Yeah, because Harvard has beaten Princeton.
Mm-hmm.
And look, again, I'm assuming Brown can get by Dartmouth. So Brown's in. And then both of these teams are in. And then the winner of the Princeton-Cornell game.
So really, Cornell-Princeton is it's a playoff game. It is a playoff game.
It is.
Okay.
Huge game.
Thank you for clarifying that. I hadn't done my homework as extensively as you have.
The final game of the weekend takes place on Sunday evening when number 11 Duke will host number 19 North Carolina in a rivalry game that's really important for North Carolina. It's their last regular season game. Duke will have another shot next weekend against Notre Dame in the final regular season game. The odd number of teams in the ACC, I think Carolina's the odd team out there. But this is a huge game for the Tar Heels.
Big time. North Carolina's currently sitting at 17 in the RPI. Struggled offensively the last month or so. You know, who can be supportive of Chris Gray in terms of scoring goals and making plays on the offensive end of the field? Goaltender Colin Krieg, I think he's just been terrific in 2022. Outstanding. But Carolina, you know, they're looking to pay back Duke from a tough loss about a month ago against the Blue Devils. And the Blue Devils sitting, 10th in RPI right now? They're not a done deal. I mean, look, they lose to Carolina, they lose to Notre Dame, they could be out of the NCAA tournament. So obviously one last game for Carolina regular season-wise. If they win, I think they put themselves in a really nice position, potentially get an at-large bid for the NCAA tournament. So this game always has high stakes, but, you know, without an ACC tournament, this becomes, you know, this is a tournament game for North Carolina.
Yep. This is a playoff game for them, for sure. Okay, next time for our give and go. And I think you might be one of the, you're a great resource for this. I've been thinking about like lacrosse facilities and resources that teams have. And between your boys being recruited and the number of different games you're broadcasting and traveling around, who's got the best facilities? How would you rank some of the ones that you've seen? I imagine you haven't seen every single facility in Division I, but of the ones you've been to, how would you rank them? And I know you like to do, lacrosse games where you're broadcasting from the Horseshoe at Ohio State. And obviously that's one of the best facilities in all of sports. I don't mean that. I mean lacrosse facilities.
I think these days it's kind of hard to differentiate lacrosse from other sports insofar as lacrosse benefits from other sports. And like, let's take a place like the University of Michigan, where the lacrosse facility is part of the Olympic building. So you also have other sports that are in there. Two of the coolest things over at Michigan is an indoor crew or a rowing pit that, you know, you turn it on and I guess there's like, you know, the current or, you know, the resistance or whatever, you can do that. Then they also have a hydraulic track for their track and field team. And what I mean by that is they can like hit a button and the corners get raised for like raised corners, like embankments and stuff for, I guess, for like relays and things of that nature. Wow. So like that, you know, Michigan's pretty cool. every, like, I think you have to take into account, you have facilities that have are state-of-the-art, brand new, and then you have facilities that might not have the bells and whistles, but they've got, like, kind of the history and the tradition there. You know, Brown is one of those I think of when I think of Stevenson Field and the NCAA championships that they've hosted throughout the years, the tournament games and things of that nature. Nickerson Field at Boston University, you know, Coach Pulley told us, you know, Babe Ruth played baseball there a long time ago. But, you know, yeah, I can tell you the locker room and Ridley Athletic Complex for Loyola University is fantastic. I haven't been to New Haven since the new lacrosse facility was constructed. I hear that's off the charts. Amazing. Carolina is as impressive as it gets in terms of, you know, kind of it, you know, the lacrosse aspect is blended into the football resources. You know, the indoor football field is used for lacrosse to practice there, to take reps and things of that nature. So, I mean, and you know, I think maybe more importantly than like the facilities are also like the people that are in the buildings, you know, the coaches and the support staff and those types of people. I mean, you know, when we went to Hopkins, we didn't have the greatest facilities, but we had officers Cruz and who was his partner in crime?
Frazier.
You know, Cruz and Frazier. We had Arthur Middleton. We had Arthur Middleton.
Rich Mascarello.
We had Mosky. We had Bob Scott. Yeah. I mean, we had people that, you know, were part of the fabric. And you know, the schools that I mentioned, even schools that I haven't mentioned, share the same thing, you know? Yeah. So I think when you talk about facilities, you got to take like the whole picture into, you know, into account.
Look at you bringing the personal element into it, the people factor.
That's what recruiting is. That's what we're, you can have the greatest facilities on the planet, but if you are a dud personality, or, you know, you have people around you that are just kind of suspect, all right, great. You know, I mean, when you go to, you know, when you go to Gold's Gym and wear your tank top and your Zumba shorts, or what were those things called? With the leopard prints or the zebra stripes or whatever.
Zubaz.
Yeah. You know, you like the, like, I mean, you know, you want to flex for the honeys. You just don't want it to be all about the iron that you're throwing around. Right.
I'm getting chalk everywhere.
Yeah. Screaming.
Spilling my Red Bull, my Monster energies.
You got your pre-workout and your little sippy
cup. Oh, yeah. Got the Bill Starr juice. Whatever. You're like, Bill Starr. Whatever's in his thermos, do not drink it.
John Haas. You
will be ineligible.
It's like one of the first pieces of advice Coach Haas gave. Dicks, don't ever drink out of Bill Starr's thermos.
It's Bill Starr, legendary strength coach. The weight room at Hopkins is named after him now, I believe. Well deserved. But man, what a character.
Right off
the star, man. I love it, Dix. Hey, that's a good place to stop. We'd like to thank our guest this week, Boston University head coach Ryan Pulley. Thank you so much, coach. Best of luck this weekend throughout the postseason. If you like what you heard, please like us on your favorite podcast app and leave a review. Tell your friends, email it, text it. Share the love. It's free and you help us out. And we love to hear from you. Give us a shout on Twitter. He's at Dixon Lacrosse and I'm simply at D_FLY. Sometimes I'm not sure people know what my, like, they don't hear that part, but I found that out on Saturday night that yes, there were
people too. People were adding you like it was their job.
There were a couple people who, I really appreciate it. It was fun. So, and nothing was too abusive, but it was, It did kicking a man when he's down, let me put it that way. And remember, stay positive, test negative, and as always, enjoy the games.
Is that a 90210 reference?
Yes.
Oh my God.